Hello and welcome to a new episode of Forum GovTech Europe, the podcast that fosters the debate on the relationship between government and technology in Europe and beyond. I'm your host, Simon, and today I have a fascinating guest over, namely Dr. Tanja Feiler. Tanja is the founder and director of StateUp, a specialist multidisciplinary advisory firm focused on digital innovation with public purpose. Moreover, she also leads the Digital State Project at the Bennett Institute for Public Policy at Cambridge University. Her work focuses on GovTech innovation ecosystems and digital government more broadly. She's published various reports and papers on the topic and can be regarded as one of the most influential thinkers within the European GovTech ecosystem. In this episode, we talked about her work at StateUp, GovTech in the UK and Europe, and why investors are increasingly turning their attention towards GovTech startups. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And now, without further ado, my conversation with Tanja. Hello, Tanja. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here today. Could you tell us who you are and how you did get into GovTech?
Sure, and thank you for having me, Simon. My name is Tanja Feiler. I'm founder of a company called StateUp, where our aim is to bridge the gap between the worlds of government and technology, with the aim, hopefully, of improving citizens' lives. So I'll come in a moment to tell you how I became interested in this area, but maybe just to say a little bit more about StateUp first, and also the other hat that I wear at the University of Cambridge. So at StateUp, we work to improve the uptake of high quality digital innovation in the public sector. And we do this through three main means. The first is through specialist consultancy services. The second is through training for policymakers. And third, we develop very deeply researched data-driven insights focused on the government technology sector. I'm also director of the Digital State Project at the Bennett Institute for Public Policy at the University of Cambridge. And in that capacity, my role focuses on independent research and postgraduate education with a focus on understanding and improving the capacity of governments as users and developers and procurers of digital and emerging technologies. And I really enjoy having these two different roles, one focused much more on research and education, and in the other being able to work much more directly with public sector organizations, international organizations, and startups as well. So it's a great combination. But in terms of how I became interested and engaged in this area in the first place, in this area of digital government, GovTech, digital governance, all of these intersecting categories and ideas. Actually, as a researcher following my PhD, initially I was working on online misinformation and disinformation campaigns. Maybe I should clarify, when I say working on, I don't mean I was involved in developing them. I was studying the patterns and dynamics of how they work. And this was pre-Trump and pre-Brexit. So it was really some of the early patterns that we were beginning to see emerge. And it was a fascinating area to focus on. But what I really wanted to understand following that work was how governments could also use technology for more positive outcomes. And it was really that interest that drew me towards thinking much more specifically about questions of digital governments and GovTech. And I was fortunate that the University of Cambridge announced the launch of the Bennett Institute around that time where that thinking was percolating for me. So it was a fantastic opportunity to begin thinking through these ideas there.
Wonderful. Very interesting journey. And yeah, I really like to ask this question right at the beginning, which is, what is your personal definition of GovTech and why do you think it's relevant? Mainly because since a fairly new topic or field emerging within political science or public policy, there's a lot of varying definitions of the term GovTech out there. So I'm very interested in how you define it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you're very much right. With any new sector as it emerges, there are many definitions that compete with one another. And sometimes there's disagreement about the meaning of these terms. And I think certainly within GovTech, we've seen there are probably 20 or 30 definitions that are currently floating around the internet to choose between. I think I would define GovTech as an ecosystem that imagines, designs, and develops valuable digital innovation with and for public sector organizations. And the idea of an ecosystem necessarily implies the involvement of a number of different organizations and individuals. Startups, I think, are at the core of this because we're talking about innovative technology or innovative applications of technology. So too, of course, are technology policymakers and public sector procurers. But I think there's also a substantive role for others, including universities, front and center, actually. So that whether that's from a training perspective or R&D, research and development. I also think that university-based GovTech spin-offs are, although few and far between still, very well placed to prioritize and build for trustworthiness because of their proximity to the latest research and discussion on ethical technology and on technology policy. Perhaps maybe one other thing I would say is that this focus on trust is certainly that something that's emerging within GovTech ecosystems internationally, and particularly in the European context, I think we see this theme. So improved efficiency, but also greater accountability in the public sector and its interactions with citizens. I think it's important to say that GovTech products and services won't be trustworthy by default. The whole ecosystem, so whether that's company founders, public servants, must contribute to building them this way. And I think that's a way that we can help public sectors to create trust, both in public institutions and the technologies that they engage.
Yes, definitely. That is a wonderful definition for GovTech. You also released the report Thinking About GovTech, A Brief Guide for Policymakers with the Bennett Institute. Could you give our listeners some brief insights into what motivated you to release this report and what it entails?
Sure. So Thinking About GovTech was published just over 2 years ago now, I think. And it's interesting to see how much has changed in that period. When I wrote Thinking About GovTech, I would say it was the very early days of public discussion of the idea of GovTech, ways to implement GovTech. And so I wrote it as a very foundational document for policymakers around the world who were beginning to become interested in this area. And it's very much focused on the demand side, on what policymakers can do to enable the uptake of GovTech within their organizations, to enable GovTech ecosystems within local and national contexts. And we draw on a number of examples from around the world, but I certainly think that if I were writing that document today, there would be so many more examples on which to draw. But broadly, I do think some of the key themes that are discussed in that document still very much stand. So areas like addressing procurement barriers for GovTech startups, areas like ensuring the provision of patient capital for startups that are focused on serving public sector audiences, engagement with academia, developing pipelines of technology talent that are interested in public sector problems. So each of these areas, I think, does still stand today. Perhaps also worth mentioning that Thinking About GovTech was very much written for an international audience, but that shouldn't be confused with the idea that the same set of technologies can simply be replicated or exported to solve exactly the same problems the world over, and they'll have exactly the same effect when that's done. I think that the impact of implementing a specific GovTech policy or program or funding initiative will vary depending on a myriad of factors at the local level. So whether that's political context, user needs, population size, diversity, all of these issues will have an impact. And it's very, very important to keep the local at core. And I think this isn't just about technology rollout, it's also about how ecosystems develop. So in some countries, lots of the pieces of the jigsaw in terms of a GovTech ecosystem might already be in place. So there may be startups with compelling ideas, there may be mission-oriented teams and enthusiastic government procurers, but they might suffer from disconnection. So therefore, to foster the ecosystem, you need to connect up these various players. But in other national contexts or even local contexts, specific dimensions of the ecosystem might actually be missing or underdeveloped. So there's also that work to be done of providing patient capital if that's the area that needs attention, or enabling more openness among government decision makers towards procuring innovation from smaller firms. So I think it's very important to think in that specific contextual level about what needs to be done to foster ecosystems.
I mean, and since you were already starting this point, what needs, like, how do you connect these players ideally? What is your approach?
Sure. So again, I think it does matter on the context. But
of course, maybe taking the UK as an example, since you're based in the UK.
Sure. So some of it, I think, is very simple in some ways. It's a matter of ensuring that there are plentiful occasions for individuals and organizations in each part of the ecosystem to connect with each other, to speak to each other, for government organizations, for example, to engage in early market engagement. So if they're looking to resolve a particular challenge that they're facing or problem that they're facing, they've gone and spoken to some of these innovative companies to understand the options available to them. I also think there's a role for what I've called previously digital translators. So this is to say individuals who really understand policy and also have a good understanding of technology innovation and are able to speak what can sometimes feel like two different languages and in some senses broker conversations between what can often feel like two different worlds. And the idea of digital translation is not to kind of keep these worlds separate and suggest that you always need a translator going back and forth. It's actually to create greater proximity between them so that they are able to speak to each other better, work together when often the cultures are very different between these different kinds of organizations. So I think that's a very, very important dimension in bridging this gap.
Right. You also mentioned StateUp. In the beginning of this year, you released the report StateUp 21, a rigorous expert analysis of promising GovTech startups. Could you tell our listeners briefly what the main findings of this report were? Because I think it is actually very interesting in terms of giving an overview and mapping out the startups that are doing interesting stuff in the GovTech area right now.
Sure. Thank you. So if thinking about GovTech focused on the demand side, that's to say policy instruments, what policymakers can do, StateUp 21 very much looks at the supply side. It looks at what startups are doing, what innovation is being developed for public sector organizations with a public purpose, and where the gaps and opportunities are as well. And it was a very interesting moment to release this report, because I think by now it goes without saying that 2020 was transformative for governments almost everywhere, and well-implemented digital technology programs became mission critical, really, both for internal processes, but also to serve citizens. And I think it's definitely fair to say that GovTech startups working with public sector organizations in many parts of the world contributed to this transition. But as we've already discussed, GovTech remains a very young sector in many parts of the world, and data on this supply side is often scattered and it's not cohesively captured by the broader, more general aggregators of information on technology companies. So what we wanted to do was bring some research and some policy expertise to address this gap and to ensure that we were replacing what sometimes can feel like hype narrative with both the data and the qualitative research to tell the story of this emerging sector. And we really did this with three primary audiences in mind. So policymakers and public servants who might want to engage with these companies, investors who might be looking at companies that serve a public purpose and wanting to understand that landscape. And of course, also entrepreneurs who might be looking to work with the public sector, but have difficulty navigating some of the possibilities there. Of course, we hope it also speaks to other audiences, but those are the three main ones. And really what we felt was that there is an information gap. So public servants often are interested in digital technologies and their public sector applications, but they need evidence to justify taking risks with promising young companies. And startups also have these unmet information needs when it comes to the public sector, in terms of spotting opportunities in this often unfamiliar market for them. And same goes absolutely with investors who often have more experience in other parts of the tech sector. So by combining the macro sector analysis and then zooming in to give detailed company profiles on these 21 companies that we think are world leading in many ways, we hope to be able to address this gap. And, you know, in terms of some of the key findings, I think, first of all, maybe it's worth mentioning some of the patterns we saw among the highest performing GovTech startups. And this was very interesting to look at because I think to date, it's been very difficult to spot patterns because the sector is so young and also because the range of problems that these startups are trying to tackle are so diverse. But I think we did begin to spot some patterns. I think the first one, very importantly actually, is that, you know, there can often be a sense with startups that they're selling so-called innovation that public sectors don't really need. But the companies that we highlighted do the absolute opposite of this. They are addressing and adapting to very big public needs. And I think that helps to create resilience for their products and services. And secondly, and you know, going back to a point we discussed earlier, they're very contextually aware. And they recognize that technology is sometimes at its best when it's supporting policy levers. I can give maybe a couple of specific examples from StateUp 21. You know, a company like Privatar that helps companies and public sector organizations comply with privacy regulations, or a company like Cyan Forensics as well that supports on implementation of policy. I think that a third thing a lot of these companies do is that they help to create trust in institutions. Again, as we discussed previously, this is absolutely critical to the development of the ecosystem. Again, I can give you one example from StateUp 21. Logically is a company that fuses human and machine capabilities to address this very major challenge of online misinformation and to support governments in that effort. The fourth pattern we observed is that these companies navigate public the fourth quality that we observed is that these companies navigate public procurement very shrewdly. It's still a challenge for them in most national and local contexts, but I think companies are increasingly understanding the challenges that public procurers themselves face and are therefore working with them often to navigate some of those challenges. And it's good to see those relationships developing. And the fifth quality I would say is that we've noticed that there has been an uptick in investment in GovTech over the past year, and investors are starting to pay more attention to them than perhaps previously. And when I say investors, I'm primarily thinking about venture capital investment, which historically has been pretty hard for companies in this space to win.
I wanted to talk about this point as well, maybe briefly only. I mean, it's no mystery that there was a hesitation from venture capitalists toward GovTech startups before the pandemic, and this is changing right now. Could you maybe shed some light on why that was the case and like why it is changing right now?
Sure. So I think, first of all, it goes back to this idea that there's increasing recognition within government organizations that digitalization is not optional anymore. And of course, that's been spurred on by the pandemic. So I think that kind of necessity dimension has a role to play. But I would also say that in the investments we're seeing, there's a very specific vision emerging of a post-pandemic world. And I think this gives us some insights as well, perhaps, into perhaps what's going on in the minds of investors who are becoming increasingly interested. So a few of those patterns that we're seeing on this front: a green recovery, of course, is front and center. A culture of some continued home working, and of course that includes among some public servants, perhaps not all, perhaps not in every part of the world, but certainly that's something to keep an eye on. I think a third very major area is a clear need for cybersecure exchanges of data. I think also looking to the future, and I say this with some trepidation, but I think there's recognition that we need our health and social care provision to be resilient to future pandemics. So whatever else is going on, we need to know that those systems are robust, and technology, of course, has a role to play in that. And I think, finally, an area that we're seeing some movement on is a sense that there's need for inclusivity, in the sense of governments quickly being able to understand what citizens are thinking and feeling in order to support decision making. And that takes very different forms, but certainly I think it's another area where we're seeing increasing interest from investors as well. So I think that gives us a fairly clear picture of some of the directions that GovTech in general is developing in, but also that's on the mind of investors at the moment.
Yes, definitely. And how do you see this GovTech ecosystem or industry developing in the coming decade, especially focusing on Europe right now? Where do you see chances and challenges?
Sure. So first of all, in terms of where I see it developing, I think those areas we've just been discussing are likely to continue to have traction over the next few months and years. I think one particular subsector, if you like, within GovTech that I would imagine we'll see a lot of development in, particularly in the European context, is the built environment and infrastructure. I think this is key to a green recovery. And as there's so much attention on that area, I think the built environment sector is likely to have a key role to play. So perhaps if we take the UK as an example, built environment assets, buildings and beyond, are responsible for roughly 40% of the country's total carbon footprint. And actually about a quarter of construction output is by the public sector. So that makes public procurement a pretty clear vehicle for change. And, you know, it's absolutely the case that digital transformation of a conservative industry like construction will take concerted effort. But I think there is increasing international consensus across stakeholder groups that this change is needed. In the UK, we see policy examples of this change. So there's the National Digital Twin, which encourages good data sharing practices, which absolutely will be a boon for innovation if well implemented. But we're also seeing a growing budget in this area. So France, for example, has set aside 20 billion euros to make buildings energy efficient, to revamp transport systems, and to upgrade care facilities. And 30% of the EU's recovery fund is dedicated to green projects. So I think there's a pretty clear direction of travel there. I think I would maybe also make one more observation in terms of potential future directions, which is that I think the global reach of COVID-19 has very much drawn attention to the need for policymakers facing similar challenges to be able to quickly understand from each other what's worked elsewhere, particularly in the context of COVID-19, given that the challenges are globally entwined. And I think to date, this has happened in a relatively ad hoc way. So policymakers and practitioners have shared ideas and learned lessons from each other in relatively informal ways. But I do think that as digital tech becomes increasingly critical to domestic governance and also a staple presence in our global interdependencies, we're going to see more formalized forums and spaces where policymakers share lessons with each other in this area. So I think we're already beginning to see this emerge, particularly among countries with shared values. So one example I would give is Digital Nations. This is an organization that I was able to write a paper on last year with my colleague Antonio Weiss, which we call digital minilateralism. So the idea that it's not just that in big multilateral organizations that technology is a topic of global lesson sharing, but actually there's something to be said for small groups of countries at similar levels of technology development or with shared values to get together, create trusted environments in which they can share ideas, learn lessons from each other, share failures with each other as well, and also perhaps work towards questions of the governance of new and emerging technologies as well. So I think that's something we are likely to see more of in the coming years. And I think these kind of digital mini-laterals will also have a role to play as countries begin to navigate as well the possibility of interoperable and cross-border digital infrastructure as well. So that's certainly an area that I would anticipate new developments in. And I would also say that kind of cooperation requires new skills from digital leaders as well. So I think often we talk about the increasing recognition that public servants in general need digital upskilling. But I think we should also keep in mind over the next few years, the new skill sets needed by digital leaders as well, including for this increasing foreign policy dimension.
Well, yeah, fantastic. Those were very interesting insights. Sadly, we are running out of time, Tanya. To all of the listeners, I would really recommend, if you haven't done so yet, to look up StateUp21 in the internet and have a look, since I think it's the most detailed analysis of GovTech startups out there currently. Tanya, could you tell our listeners where they can find you and your work online?
Sure, there are a few places, but there is, of course, LinkedIn. I'm Tanya Feiler. There is, of course, also our StateUp website, stateup.co. And there is also the website of the Bennett Institute for Public Policy at the University of Cambridge, where we have a multiplicity of research into various policy domains that are important for the 21st century.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for being here today, Tanya.
Thank you so much, Simon. Thanks for the great questions.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, you can subscribe to the podcast on any given podcasting platform. If you'd like to come on the show, feel free to send me an email to simon@forumgov.tech. Until next time, Simon.